Hi, Internet. Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack friction. We don't unpack friction. This is not a science podcast, as much as I would love to do one.
No physics. No.
Without the friction.
No.
Did you have a bad traumatic experience in a physics class?
I never properly learned trigonometry.
Okay.
My
I don't think you're alone.
I didn't even try. My math class's philosophy on trigonometry was, we have these things called graphic calculators. We don't need to learn this crap. So I tried to do physics. And you cannot do physics without properly learning trigonometry.
Oh.
At least not, like, vector physics. And actually show your work.
Dear like, sweet past so, Melissa.
So here's another weird side note. John and I are very intuitive problem solvers. To the point that we could intuitively balance chemical equations and solve algebra problems without having to show our work. And it was not because we looked at the back of the book and cheated. We just literally knew that was the answer. And so we would get papers back quite frequently saying, why didn't you show your work? And I'm like, what work? That's my answer. You can't do that in physics. I always got it wrong. So no physics. That's my next shirt. Other than hashtag, I don't like horror at all. No physics.
Okay, so we've gone over what our brand is not. Our brand is Unboxing Story, where we usually go over different types of stories and talk about trends and use some of our favorites or least favorites in the world of fiction, be it books, movies, TV shows,
et cetera,
games sometimes, to talk about different things, and because it's spoopy Halloween season.
Did you say spoopy?
Yeah, it's a new internet thing. I don't really know where it came. I didn't think it was a trend.
I don't like it.
You don't?
No.
Okay. I'll keep it to myself.
It's a K, people. Just saying.
I can't make those.
And you can't make me laugh because then I'm just going to start coughing because I'm still trying to survive this cold.
Oh, you think?
Apologize ahead of time for the
Did you get your flu shot? Let me just be a little brother.
No, not yet. Because if I get it while I'm sick, it's going to be a problem. So I have to wait till I'm no longer coughing like I have consumption.
Like you have? Yeah. Okay. This is the ghost episode.
Woo!
That was the sound of Ghost Rider in the distance. Because we have some good news and then some more good news. Ghost Rider was being canceled because everything is in this weird Disney Plus is about to happen state. And so Kevin Feige apparently, according to Daniel Rickman, who is like an insider, said that he is still very passionate about trying to make it happen. So that probably means that there's like meetings happening.
So not only are we getting The Mandalorian, we are likely to get Ghost Rider.
Hey.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's interesting because the other Marvel Knights, for all of you nerdy Marvel comics fans out there, were mostly like street level people. So you have like Punisher, Daredevil, stuff like that. And so those have been in the show. Oh, Luke Cage have been in the shows. But then you have people like Iron Fist and Ghost Rider that are just kind of like, yeah, we fight crime, but also the mythological like underpinnings of society. And so you have like Ghost Rider that perennially like, you know, goes on top of his skyscraper to talk to a dragon, and Ghost Rider who, did I say Ghost Rider?
You did. You meant Iron Fist. I get it.
Yeah, very good. See, that's that problem zone we were talking about.
Yeah, you know, she didn't I understood.
Need to show her work. Ghost Rider, who is Nicolas Cage and was for a second that awesome, I don't know the name of the actor, but
I want the guy from S.H.I.E.L.D. I want the guy who played Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to come back and have a full-on Mexican Day of the Dead Ghost Rider, because that guy rocked.
Yeah, that's
and his car was beautiful.
It's based on a recent contemporary ghostwriter story. It was contemporary when I was in college. That was this version of Ghost Rider where his skull was looked like it was a different character technically.
Yeah.
But in LA, there was a low riding Mexican Ghost Rider, and he had a cool looking face basically that looks like the sugar skulls that you see in the day. Well, they make a lot of things into skulls, but I remembered that from middle school, making sugar skulls. Anyway, so it's not dead. And also Gargoyles, which is one of my favorites.
Woo!
From
the so excited
after Saturday
school,
morning
after school animated lineup
is coming to Disney Plus. And yes, because I was already thinking of trying to find it again because we had talked about it earlier, and it's one of the best cartoons on the planet. So I'm glad to hear that's coming back.
And this is I have to let John know that it's one of those shows. John was talking recently about the oddity of you discovering your romantic tendencies when you're still only like 8 and you don't really quite know what's going on, but you're like, I know I like this thing. I am pretty sure Goliath influenced a whole lot of my impression of what a man ought to be, even though he was a gargoyle. It didn't matter. So, yes.
Yeah.
Y'all should reminisce and drool over Goliath later.
And also the voice, Keith David.
Yes.
I recently watched an interview with him where he was talking about
beautiful voice, too, actually. Does he actually talk that deep normally, or is that like...
No, wow. That's him.
Holy crap.
That's all him. He was talking about all the different parts that he did, and I like the interviewer kind of went for a lot of the things that people don't normally talk about, because, I mean, when you have a career like he has, people tend to, like, hit the same signposts all the time. So, but it was an interesting interview. Double Toasted, if you want to look it up on YouTube. Briefly, before we get into the main things, we watched What Lies Beneath and The Orphanage, and I wanted to get Melissa to talk about a little bit of her background with those movies and go into kind of like the genres that they fit in, because I feel like personally I kind of hit those genres back in the 90s and early 2000s and kind of had their hits that I remember and misses that I remember. I wanted to briefly talk about Fallen and Frequency, apparently both done by the same director, Gregory Hoblit. Which Melissa says it.
Yes, she sounds like a mini hobbit. Not that they need to be any smaller. But apparently, instead of calling them gnomes in Middle Earth, they're hoblets. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
And also Fracture. So he has three movies that start with F that are all kind of like...
And Mom has recommended Fractured, so maybe we ought to see that one.
No, that's a new... I was asking
her
that.
It's a different one.
It's a different thing. Okay. I thought, so I got confused because Frequency has had a TV show adaptation recently, and The Bone Collector is having one coming up. Perennially, you'll see these smattered around different network and
streaming
services. So, Frequency. So, what did they turn that into a procedural? How does explain
yes.
First your experience with the movie, and then like. What interested you in the new show?
So, pretty sure I only watched the movie because Jim Caviezel was in it.
Oh.
But then it turned out to be a very good movie also, so it's not like that was a dumb reason to watch it, because Jim Caviezel is usually in good things. And it was a very well-done movie. I like the parallel timeline sort of thing that happens. So, they did the same thing in the show, but expanded on it.
Mm-hmm.
So... In the movie, they basically do what happens in the movie in, like, the first 2 or 3 episodes in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then expand on the consequences afterwards.
Oh.
So, because the daughter changed the timeline, she now realizes that happened and is dealing with the consequences of that happening, but is still talking to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like this whole... There are, like, very complicated parallel stories happening.
Mm-hmm.
30 years apart, or however far apart it is, 20 years apart.
Mm.
I liked the movie, especially because it's very focused on the father. Well, in the movie, it's a boy, though, isn't it? I think.
Yes.
It's father-son. relationship. Then the show, they changed it to a daughter.
Right.
But it's very, very strongly related to the father-son relationship and the importance of that relationship. Hmm. And the strength that that bond has between them is basically what allows them to communicate as in the movie.
So would you say that it is similar to ghost stories in the sense that even though it has this sci-fi angle to it, it's basically about a similar kind of like an emotional bond, like from the past?
It could have worked as a ghost story, like if it had been the son talking to the ghost of his father and figuring out a mystery, it would have felt very similar, I think. You're right. That's a good point.
And Fallen is one of my bays.
The best version of a demon possession movie ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've talked before, not on the podcast, but about angels and demons and how you can kind of veer towards two different things. I think eventually we'll have to talk about Twin Peaks because I'm going through this 4.5-hour dissertation right now on it. And we've kind of talked about it in the past because it's this interesting thing because it's an event, whether you hated it or loved it. And so it kind of sticks in people's craws, even if they don't necessarily, it's not positive. Anyway, but there's stuff in that to me is like a postmodern interpretation of a demon and angel thing.
Yeah.
That's very, very abstract, very, very maybe specific to how David Lynch himself experiences the world. It's very existentialist from his point of view, basically. And then you have like something like Spawn, where it's so divorced from anything.
It's just almost cartoonish or like comic bookish.
Yeah, so it's so elevated and so unrelatable that, you know, it's its own kind of beast. But something like Fallen follows a Philadelphia cop who is just captured this guy and sent him to death row. And there's this conspiracy that he uncovers where this other cop was supposedly framed, and he uncovers that there's this demon who can transport based on touch, and that he framed this cop for this guy's murders, that this demon basically hopped from him to this serial killer and is now out to torment him. And it's, I just really like the very naturalistic dialogue. These feel like real people. This feels like a real situation. Mostly because the demon doesn't necessarily do anything that a normal psychopath wouldn't do.
Right.
And his fixation on him, you could see any type of, you know, serial killer fixating on someone the way that he...
I think it's true, too, because, like, they kept the supernatural elements very, very simple, right? You're right. Like, basically everything it does could have been just a psychopathic human, except for the fact that it can jump bodies. That's, like, the only thing.
Right.
That is really supernatural. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, massive spoiler alerts if you haven't seen this movie. Although that comes out pretty fairly early in the thing.
Yeah.
Just the idea that that's it. That's really literally the supernatural thing that happens. It can jump bodies. Mm-hmm. So it is very naturalistic. It's very real feeling. Like, that's the only major.
Yeah, so it's like, what if a horror movie happened in the middle of a noir film?
Right.
Kind of. And so I think that's going to kind of set up for us what are kind of what we like about horror movies, because it's been a running joke between the two of us that
I don't like horror at all.
Because I'll be watching something that is technically not labeled, like you wouldn't label it horror, but when you see something, some burst of violence, or if you see somebody, you know.
So like, I liked Heroes. One of the characters in Heroes is a serial killer and is like lopping the heads off of other people all over the place.
Yeah.
But no, I don't like horror at all.
but I feel like that's more of a, So I want to kind of explore that a little bit because I feel like it's a little, it's an interesting topic. But yeah, Fallen for me is a good example of a very subtle horror movie, and it seems to be in vogue, in the 2000s because we were having this like resurgence of stalker and slasher movies. There was this kind of trend towards having more supernatural things, starting with like Paranormal Activity and stuff like that. And so there was this thing of like, well, this is a psychological thriller and it might have some kind of supernatural elements to it. And I think that that's one element that I like about Fallen, is that you really get to know John Hobbs, the character, as opposed to some weird like confluence of events. Like I'm very much a person that likes a character driven story. And so just having this plot that centers around some kind of supernatural happenstance isn't really as interesting to me as getting to know the character, having some kind of, you know, hero's journey that they're on, that they figure something out. There's kind of a really good mystery going on, and you're trying to kind of you feel like you're figuring it out along with him. And it's interesting because apparently the reviews for this were not very good when it came out. It shocked me because it's one of my favorite like horror movies of all time. I feel like it kind of falls in line with something like Silence of the Lambs. That kind of very dark thriller. And I feel like, you know, as far as literature goes, you get those like cozy mysteries, and there's this kind of idea of there are thrillers that you can wear pajamas while you read them. and I feel like there's a niche of movies and television that are kind of in a similar space. But this is very dark. This is very sad in parts. But there is so much catharsis when you get to the conclusion of the story. It is very gripping throughout the whole thing because you are wondering how the heck, you know, John Hobbs is going to escape.
How is this going to work?
Yeah. This villain.
And there's a lot of really great actors in it too. Denzel Washington plays Hobbs.
I'm gonna look up the actress because I don't know her name. Oh, she is really good.
John Goodman is another cop. What's the cop?
Oh, then boss? Donald Sutherland. There's so much stuff that they do that is so cool to me because, like, it seemed like the police like precinct, they must have only had the two rooms.
Uh-huh.
And so they did a good job of making it feel like it was a real, you know, precinct, and that like there was always things going on. And the way that there's just this one scene where like they're talking out of like the edge of their mouths to each other, and you can tell that they like despise each other, but it makes it seem like this would just go unnoticed. Like,
right.
This isn't like this unrealistic outburst that's happening in the middle of
Right. It's not like Law and Order where like everybody in the precinct stops to watch the three main characters argue.
Right.
It felt very much like, oh, whatever, it's them. Mm-hmm. Again.
And the same thing goes for Ambeth Davids.
Really?
It's a nice name. So she plays the daughter of the cop that was framed by the demon
previously.
And yeah, and I like her with Denzel as well. They're very good at their chemistry is very good without being like it's interesting because they're in similar parts, like say like for some reason I thought of Will Smith and the doctor in iRobot
oh.
with him, where like you they're very good at making you feel like they're both real characters and that this is how they would act if they actually met each other.
Right.
And I think it's probably due to like directors that maybe do some self-inserting or there's a lot of forced romance or even like things that are just so subtle that suggest through how something is shot, maybe through what a director tells them to do, that make it seem like there's some, tension that they're trying to build between the characters. But this really just feels like if a demon was after you and this other person, that like you, there would be something in the air. And there is something in the air when she asks him, "Do you believe in God?" She isn't just asking him, like, okay, we need to have a scene about spirituality. Right.
Do you believe in God? It's like, do you believe in God? Because if you don't,
yeah,
I'm going to have to, like, do some serious praying for you or something. Yeah. Like, there's a reason. And he feels it. Like, the way he reacts is like, she wasn't just asking me if I go to church. She was asking, like, seriously.
Yeah.
For my life's sake, something going on here. It was a really good scene.
Yeah, so I really dig this director and these movies, and I think that's a good place to stop before we talk about What Lies Beneath and The Orphanage. So I feel like I saw commercials for What Lies Beneath, but it was one of those movies where I'm like, maybe like 9.
Yeah, you were young when that came out.
And I'm like, oh, baby. What is that?
I seem to remember it being a big deal. Mm-hmm. Especially since it was Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer. Mm-hmm. Like, they were headliners at the time. And, I mean, not that they aren't now, but, I mean, they were really, it was their prime time. And it was a big movie when it happened. Mm. This kind of thriller was all the rage at the time too. Mm. This is just how I remember this now. I could be totally remembering, daydreams, but me and Mom were, I'm pretty sure I went with Mom to the theater to see it. Someone did theater to see it.
Oh.
And was all excited because I liked them. Mm. And I like ghost stories that aren't really ghost stories.
I want to drill down a little bit in terms of the things that maybe turn you off from a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like going through Fallen, there are certain things that there's, if it has a demon like Spawn, like my friend gave me the Spawn comic in high school and I got to a certain point and I was just like, there's something about this that I don't like. Whereas with Ghost Rider, I stayed with it and it's been something that like, he's not like my favorite character of all time, but I'm vaguely interested whenever I see that pop up. So is there something about, so let's start at the beginning. The manor, does that have something to do? Because I think that like we've kind of been talking about gothic literature and romance literature.
Right.
And how we both, the kids say stan it. We stan it. It's an Eminem reference.
What? Don't do that to me.
The thing is, but I think of Stan Lee when I think of Stan.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm going to use it. Anyway, we're off the trail here. But it's about a river house, a lake house.
Yes.
And
so I don't like just slasher movies.
Okay.
Unless they're trying to be funny.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I liked Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
But Cabin in the Woods was more than just a slasher movie. That was a satire on slasher movies in general. And then went meta with it in a beautiful way. So that's a totally different thing. Like, and I don't like horror that's designed just to, like, gross you out or shock you. Like, I don't like shock horror stuff.
Right. I'm on the same page. And I think that's an interesting thing because there is, you would think that there would not be nuance within that, but I feel like there's a certain limit that I have And, like, for example, we were going to start to watch Law Abiding Citizen. Now, that isn't really marketed as a horror movie. But when you get into
it, like, I thought it was a police procedural thing, and then it was torture porn. And I'm like, what is this nonsense? This is not what I signed up for.
So, yeah, so there, I think that there is, you like, somebody could ask you in a conversation, do you like this type of movie? And then there's something that is in that genre, and then it gets to a certain point, and you're like, eh.
Because, nope. Like, I thought it was going to be, I thought Law Abiding Citizen was going to be like Kiss the Girls, right? Which had the suggestion of torture stuff happening, but you didn't see any of it. And it wasn't about that. It was about catching the bad guy. As opposed to, I don't know. Anyway. And I generally don't like monster movies. I will watch some on purpose. Like, I watch Godzilla, but that's more than a monster movie. That's Godzilla. That's a whole separate genre unto itself. And I prefer, like, this kind of thing where it's more thriller than horror, necessarily. It is more gothic feeling in the sense of it's very woman-centered.
Yeah.
It's very, like, very much about the past or some sort of secrets that are being hidden and that the woman feels like she's going to find this out. Which is weird because the one game that I will not run right now is called Bluebeard's Bride. And that is the point of Bluebeard's Bride. The ghost story that is, well, not even ghost story, the psycho story that is Bluebeard is that young peasant girl marries rich estate owner dude. He introduces her to the house, says you're allowed to go wherever you want, just not that room. And then goes on vacation somewhere, not vacation, but goes on a business trip or something. And she explores the whole house and is starting to think, okay, this guy's a little wonky. What's going on here? Unlocks the one room and finds, like, you know, seven of his past wives, like, hanging on meat hooks in the room. Like, I don't like that game because you are literally playing the woman who is terrified of her husband. As opposed to these stories where, I mean, and What Lies Beneath You eventually are terrified of the husband, but it's not like, it's not about the torture, like you're saying, it's not about the torture aspect. It's not about the, the brutality of a husband against the wife. It's more about like a mystery. There's a mystery at the heart of it. There's some secret that needs to be revealed, usually related to a psychological thing that is important in the story.
Right. And I think there was something recently that I was interested, especially since I'm going through this Twin Peaks thing, that I think I've been using transgressive to talk about specifically characters within a story who their Wikipedia defines it as, like, they can't feel anything without doing something bad. Whereas I think my definition is going to move more towards the story itself transgresses normal tenets of storytelling.
Oh.
And so what interests me about that is that I feel like there is a trend of postmodernism where the whole point is to try to tell a story that can't be told. So a cute version of this would be Pixar making toys that can talk.
Right. Or the feelings inside your head being people.
Right. So there is some version of that, I feel like, in attacking taboo subjects. Right. And so what's interesting is that you can start to have a fascination for something and then be sickened by the fact that you feel like you're fetishizing it. And I feel like there have been times when there are certain movies or books or something that I start to have that sickening feeling with. I'm going through it kind of right now with I Am Legend, because so much of it is about his isolation. And there's this sickening feeling I'm getting from reading one character that just hates the rest of
everything. Earth.
And in some sense, I'm fascinated by it because it is a narrative challenge. Can I get to like this person who has so much contempt for the rest of everything? And am I interested in what he's trying to say by showing a character that is like this? And so I feel like there is some thread with that specific isolationism with gothic horror that is a part of that weird love-hate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where obviously, if you are isolated, it's a horrible feeling, but there is a catharsis in watching someone that is going through that thing. And so I feel like that's one way I can relate to it, even though with both of these women, like I can't identify with the specifically feminine things. Like, for example, the What Lies Beneath is really about
her husband having had an affair on her.
Right.
Basically.
And the orphanage is about motherhood in a more general way.
But yeah, I like that. I like that kind of thing where it's a psychological thing about a woman that you can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I like that in ghost stories in general. I like ghost stories to be very psychological. Like, mm-hmm. this ghost is here for a reason, and it has to do with something in the past that needs to be corrected or dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing with like the. That trope of an unfinished business.
Right, right.
That the character is handling. That makes it different than something where the villain has more agency because they're, you know, torturing people for maybe 45 minutes of the half hour, the hour and a half.
So, like, in both things, in What Lies Beneath, the ghost is coming up because the husband cheated on the wife and then killed the whatever you call it. What do you call the chick that you're having an affair with? Whatever they call that. And then in...
I believe I've heard apologists use the word mistress, but...
Oh, mistress. Yes, there you go. I couldn't think of the word. And then in the orphanage, the ghosts are coming in because the children want a mother again or mm-hmm. want someone to take care of them.
Right.
And this lady has also just lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of like need that they both have
mm-hmm.
that she wants to fix.
Right.
Now, granted, maybe we can save that if you want to remind me at the end of whatever else we're talking about to talk about the ending of the orphanage
oh, yeah.
specifically, because so, I know we had dissonance there. But I like the way that both stories portray the mystery aspects. So, like, the woman is kind of, like you were saying, it's almost a cozy mystery if there weren't ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're, you know, amateur sleuths trying to figure out mm-hmm. what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But then both of them also have a deeper psychological problem that they aren't even facing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Michelle Pfeiffer is in denial about her husband having had an affair and about how sucky their relationship actually is. And she's, mm-hmm. you know, actually kind of I'm losing all my words today.
Compartmentalizing?
No, she's projecting it onto the neighbor.
Oh, wow.
Right? So she's assuming the neighbor has a sucky relationship
mm-hmm.
and that the neighbor's husband killed the wife,
right.
when in fact it's her house that's messed up.
Mm-hmm.
The orphanage is a little different, but it's also very much about like being isolated and having lost something
mm-hmm.
and wanting to find it again to an extreme point.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think they were both very well told and I enjoyed them very much.
Well, what's interesting, and we're trending towards the end, but we do have some time. If you have anything to add, but there is something about the ending of The Orphanage that was disappointing in terms of my viewing of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as I've kind of discussed with you before, it was one of those things that was unsatisfying from my expectations of it, but I didn't think made it any less of a movie.
Okay.
But then there's a part of me that feels strongly about the idea that there's this trend where that trope of am I crazy, where I have that kind of weird aversion to it because there's this weird sense I get from the writer that there's this, like, pervading, like, megalomania about it. Whereas, like, I think most male tropes, so I could say, like, The Shining, American Psycho, usually the point is this person is going crazy and they should knock it off. Whereas with these two, I think maybe we could discuss maybe why we think this is. The thing is subverted to this person is not crazy, and there is some catharsis that you get, and yeah. It's not necessarily that you blame the main character.
Right. Most of it, I think, goes back to, because A, they're women, mm-hmm. and in most of these sorts of stories, what makes it a gothic story too, if we're going to talk about them being very gothic, mm-hmm. is the idea that if a woman is saying something like this, mm-hmm. where, you know, they're speaking out and saying something is wrong and something needs to be fixed, mm-hmm. societally and historically, they've been told, no, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. You're imagining things. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Both in physical health care. So, like, there has been a long time before women were able to speak about, like, just pains that they have in general, pain mm-hmm. problems with childbirth, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just been as, like, oh, whatever, you don't know what you're talking about, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. To problems with their husbands, problems with being mistreated by mm-hmm. society around them. They're either told you're crazy or you're a witch, mm-hmm. you know, long enough ago.
Right. So maybe... Yeah, no.
So the triumph of the gothic horror story that are these kinds of women, well, I guess what they call it now, I forget where I first heard it called that, but where it's a women's specifically horror story, mm-hmm. is that catharsis of, I was right, mm-hmm. this needs fixed, and I'm going to fix it.
Right.
It may not end happily for the woman to fix it, mm-hmm. but that is the goal. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think it was kind of cool more recently, because of more women getting involved in writing stories and more women, stronger female characters appearing, mm-hmm. you get stuff like Dark Phoenix Saga or Maleficent, where it's not just, oh, you think I'm crazy. It's, you think I am the villain. And mm-hmm. now I have to be the bad guy here or this isn't getting fixed. Mm-hmm. And they literally sacrifice their place mm-hmm. to be the bad guy to say, like, okay, fine, but I'm still doing this to fix it. Kind of idea.
Yeah.
Because historically that has been how women were treated when they spoke up mm. about stuff.
Yeah. And I think maybe the more that I'm working on this talk that I'm going to do at the Evil Expo, January 27th?
Somewhere in there.
It's that weekend at some point. I'm talking to the computer, but.
Because anyway. The computer knows, but it's not telling us.
The idea that I'm trending towards, I think, is maybe the mistake of certain people to reduce a different language, which I think to me is like the joy that I get out of writing is it's somehow adding to the manner in which you tell it, not just the specific, like, you know, trends maybe. Because it feels like that is a reaction to a very complex problem. And so the kind of like Dark Knightification of the hero is an interesting trend that I'm not sure has a lot of things. But I agree with your point that I think for like you said, historically and societally, the idea that a man should police their own morality and, you know, they can justify their own existence has been historically what, like, they've had the agency to do. And so there is that disproportionality of female stories being, like, I'm justified by my own actions as well. So it's I like to play with that just because it's an interesting kind of thing that if you presuppose that everyone has their own responsibilities and you know, their own part to play, seeing those things being this constant, you know, wrestling match is an interesting idea.
Yeah. Actually, maybe I should try and put together an article on the, like, comparing stuff like these women gothic horrors to stuff like Fight Club and American Psycho, where it's the guy that actually is crazy, but everyone thinks he's cool because of it.
Right.
Right? Like, it's considered this, like, oh, look at that guy. He's doing what he wants to do.
He's a bad boy.
Right. He's a bad boy. As opposed to when a woman tries to do that, it's like, holy crap, you're the evil witch. Like, yeah. It's this interesting dichotomy going on there.
Right. But that to go into the orphanage, and a slight spoiler alert, that it is interesting to me that I feel like the mystery within it is a little bit more sophisticated than in What Lies Beneath. Like, if anything, if anything, you can say that, like, my mom was like, I don't trust the husband.
Yeah, because Harrison Ford was playing the husband, and you're like, you don't make Harrison Ford play the husband if he doesn't have a bigger part in this mess, which is true.
Right.
But I think they did a good job of surprising you with what his involvement was.
Yeah, and I think really, and with a lot of these types of things, they do try to stress in the third act just how mistaken the character is not.
Yes.
Or how right, you know, how right you are because of just how terrible he is. And I do like how they planted something earlier. I won't spoil that part for you. But how they plant something earlier that comes in at the end that is truly horrifying to watch in the last act. With the orphanage, there was something set up that because I think maybe this is also part of what my viewing experience was like. Del Toro has a way of doing grim fairy tales that makes him kind of like the European version of Tim Burton in that they are scary in the sense that they are more detailed creatures, more kind of lifelike special effects and stuff.
Like Jim Henson level creepy.
Yeah. That
not creepy necessarily because it would
probably be scary to a child.
Yeah.
But in watching them, you're just like, okay, I see what you're doing here. And this is certainly like with things like Pan's Labyrinth, there are elements that are scary, but you kind of get used to his visual language and you see kind of his brand of gothic horror, and it's more thrilling than it is horrific. Whereas with this, there it was, I think, more, you could say, uneven with the thrills. I thought I wasn't sure whether it was going to go fully like, you know, like there's a someone that gets hit by a car. I'll just say that, and that was like out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and like
it was a very shocking moment.
Yeah, and so it wasn't necessarily like in America, like we're used to a thrill a minute,
right?
Type thing.
It was not paced like a regular thriller.
And but then also like there was a mystery, but it wasn't necessarily like I would say like Fallen is a little bit more formulaic in the sense that like it wants you to have these even clues so that you feel like you're right next to him and you're going through this mystery. It didn't hold your hand that much, and so for that reason, like I think it is interesting because it was more about studying her character and her emotional journey. And then, so there was some of that thing that made it to me transgressive in the end where it wasn't feeding me what I expected it to. And so it has that kind of like bittersweet like taste at the end that makes you really, you know, it affects you after having seen it.
I feel like that's a characteristic of Spanish cultural stories in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, Del Toro is very much like that. And I've read some other stuff from either from Spain or from South America where it feels very much like that. Like you're expecting a specific thing and that is not what they give you. They like screw with your expectations a lot.
Right.
But it is still even their more contemporary stories come across feeling more like fairy tales than anything we do in America. And I love that about them, but there are times where it almost obscures the story too much. Like, I've read some where I'm just like, I started trying to read The Alchemist, and I'm like, wait, what is going on right now? I don't understand what's happening. But yeah, it's just a big cultural
it plays with your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And I want to now watch the other one that I think is produced by him, but maybe not directed by him, Devil's Backbone. Because I think it actually has a lot more in common with The Orphanage than it does Pan's Labyrinth, which is the one big foreign language film of his that I've seen. So yeah, I think that'll be it for us. Thank you for listening. If you have your own favorite ghost stories, you can hit us up at Unboxing Story on Twitter and Facebook.
And unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com.
You can also leave us a message at anchor.fm/unboxing-story, or just put in Anchor Unboxing Story in Google and then click that link. And you can maybe be on the show. Yeah, that's it for us in this spooky edition of Unboxing Story. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.